Cyril Greenland, Reel 7. Yes, I think it would be interesting for people to know a little more about the Tientsin Volunteer Corps. Could you tell me, really, when it was started? When would it have been...
I think it was started during the Boxer Rebellion as part of the defence of Tientsin, which was under siege by the Boxers for a short time, I think. Then it continued on. I don't know much about it before I joined. All I know is that my father was in it, and he was the colour sergeant of the Volunteer Corps.
What was your father's name?
William Thomas, W.P. He was also a crack shot, a world crack shot, actually. He was a good solid bloke, not he'd get a rifle and they'd never moved. And then in the coronation shoot, 1910, he was one of the world leaders. I think he got a perfect score or whatever. He was a really crack shot. That's all I know about that. I don't think they were ever called out. They may have been called out during the revolution in 1910, I'm not sure. Just to stand by or whatever. But I joined, I was in the University of London OTC, and when I went back to China, I didn't want any more military. But then the Chinese students rebelled or rioted, and I decided that it was my duty to join. So I joined, first of all, as a signaller in the artillery unit, and then I transferred, which was armed with those, did you put that down before? 3.75 mountain guns, which could be taken apart and put on mules. They were that type of gun. I think dating from the Indian Mutiny or some time like that. We did have a few firing practices, but the shells were going all over the place. And that wasn't our bad accuracy. Then the British government replaced them with 2.5 howitzers, which we kept until 1939, when they were taken and sent back to Hong Kong for the defence of Hong Kong. But then we started an armoured car. We had two armoured cars unit. And the rest were infantry, either machine gun or rifle units. And that just carried on like that, with numbers diminishing a bit because people were going, joining up and that sort of thing, until the war. And when the war broke out, the Japanese merely asked us to return our uniforms and weapons or whatever. And when we handed them in, they were very polite and quite amused in some ways. But I think the whole thing was done, as I said many times, by volunteers, not by actual Japanese regular soldiers or officers. So it was all very peaceful.
What were your uniforms? Hmm? What uniforms did you wear?
British uniform, and later we wore berets. I've got a picture somewhere in berets. There's just one incident which might be of interest. About 3 days before the war broke out, we put an armed guard on our volunteer headquarters. The story being that they were afraid that Chinese rioters would go in and pinch the ammunition or whatever. Now, I was on the first night. That was Friday before the war broke out. We were in three lots. A funny incident occurred on the third night. We used to go there about 7 o'clock after office and stay till about just after 6 in the morning when we woke up and rushed home and got a bath and changed. Now, on the last night, the Sunday night, going into the Monday morning, all the volunteers woke up and got changed and went home. But one didn't. He overslept. So when he woke up, he went out of the headquarters and hired a rickshaw and started to run home. And he hadn't got very far because there was a line of Japanese soldiers. They were setting off to attack the volunteer headquarters, you see. And when they got to this, rickshaw got to this line, the officer told the troops to open up, Japanese troops, and let the rickshaw through, and this chap was dressed in the British Army uniform. But there was no worry, no real rough treatment at all. Well, that's good. I did join the Light Horse, we had a Light Horse uniform, unit. Very fancy uniform. But I couldn't ride. And they tried to teach me to ride, but I was constantly thrown off, so I gave it up and left the Light Horse with their fancy uniform.
You seem to have had a lot of different units in it.
We did, yes. Yes, we had about, in the armoured cars, we had about 20, I think. In the Light Horse in those days, they had about 20. The infantry unit, I think they had two platoons, about 50 or 60. Machine gun unit, well, that was merged into the armoured cars later. And I say we had these two armoured cars, which, when the Japs pinched them, of course, what did they use them for? Food lorries. Because it had an open back, you know, like a utility. The armour was in the front. they use them to take food down to their various outposts. It's funny.
Did you have contact with the regular army? Did the regular army, you know, come to give training or lectures?
Our adjutant was an army officer. And we had usually a couple of sergeants who would train us in various things. As each regiment came, we got these two or three people, and then when the new regiment came, we had new people. So it changed every time that the regiment came.
And did the other nationalities, the other concessions, did they all have their volunteer force?
I think so.
Just the British?
I'm not sure the French didn't have conscription, actually. So they may have had a conscripted volunteers, I don't know. And I say, we didn't mix with the French, so I can't really tell you much about them. They had a very nice club, I know that, I went once or twice. But there's only one Frenchman, really.
Were you given medals at all for service?
We got a service medal after 12 years. Now, I had done 17 years, so I got a bar on mine, 17 years. Now, unfortunately, my main medal, engraved and all that, was pinched. I left it behind and lost it. But my brother had somehow or other sneaked out the spare medals. So I got a spare dress medal, one of these tiny ones, which I've got in here, I can tell you later, with the bar on, 17 years. But we didn't get any service medals or anything like that. I mean, a lot of chaps had served in the war, and of course they had the service medals. But as a volunteer, I didn't get service medals, except the long service medals.
And after the end of the war, the end of World War II, was it? Did you continue the volunteer?
No, it was Chinese territory, you see, because treaty ports were taken over.
Immediately?
They were taken over while we were in camp in 43 or 44. Must have been 44, I think, or the end of 43. Taken over by Chiang Kai-shek. Of course, he couldn't get there because the Japs were in control. And he didn't actually take control over the concessions until the end of the war. 45, when he could send in all his friends to the high positions.
So that must have made a great difference to your life, going back to Tientsin and not having that sort of special status, would you say?
Strangely, no. I don't think. I was only there a few months getting the company straightened out. Then I went on leave for 6 months. to Australia. And when I came back, the company, the chap running the company was one of the pre-war directors, an absolute bastard of a... a naughty man, multi-millionaire, and he and I didn't get on very well. So I quit and joined the mining company, as I explained to you, in April 47. So I wasn't in Tenzin that long. But I think it continued all right. The country club was still alive somehow, and people were still there. But of course that didn't last long, because another 18 months and everybody had to clear out. And the country club, I believe, was made into a railwayman's club by the Mao Zedong crowd. What happened after that, when I went out there on my trips, it was a sort of club, but not a membership club. They let it out, they had a magnificent ballroom, swan floor, and that was still in existence, of course. And I used to let it out for whoever controlled it, the commos. It must have been the commos, when I went out. They used it for parties and things. In fact, the first time we tried to get in there, they made us pay to go in, which was a bit of a side issue. But they still had the swimming pool, 100 metres, swimming pool. Billiard tables, I'm not sure whether they were there or not. The squash courts were just rubbish dumps. They didn't play squash for Chinese as well. We didn't go over other parts of the club. And the whole of the garden, all the tennis courts, except about four, I think, had been made into garden. But we didn't get round because our guide was in a hurry to get us back. And the next time we went, we just walked in and had another walk round to show, because we had other people with us from Australia, relatives.
You were also going to refer to the list you made of the food you had in your Shanghai.
Yeah, well, this was what was supposed to be the basic food. I'll find it in there. Okay, Yonghua CAC at Civil Assembly Centre. Daily fixed ration. I can't read because I can't see. Rice, 0.528 of a pound. Bread, 0.594. Vegetable, 0.871. Meat, 0.4356. Sugar, 0.033, salt, 0.024, oil, 0.0198, tea, 0.0132 per person. I suppose they divided 50 tons by 100,000 people, you see. That's how they got all these points.
So little fractions you had.
We didn't. This was just as I say, it was supplied to us in bulk. They divided it by the number of people, that's how they got that. We weren't issued 0.3 of a piece of sugar or whatever. I haven't got the weight in ones, I don't think, but I do have the weight, I do have the parcels, American parcels. There were just a few of the main items. We had milk powder, tins of salmon, jam, butter, vitamin C, coffee, packets of chocolate, chewing gum, of course, toilet soap, cheese, milk, pate, whatever that is, pecan cigarettes, Chesterfield cigarettes, raisins, prunes, sugar, cream or something, called prem, swam, one of these meat things. Then they had additional supplies like toothbrushes or whatever razors we could have. That came sort of separately. And I just planned it out. that we would have so much, like today we'd open a tin of coffee and that's have to last so many days, that sort of thing.
Oh yes, I can see your chart, how useful that must have been. Mm. And you see, you had some over at the end of the war, did you?
Yeah, we hadn't finished very long. Another thing that was quite good, we had tin tomatoes. And I took the seeds and I planted them in the block of land next to our room. And so I planted them in the spring. And in the August, just when we were relieved, all the plants came up and tomatoes all over the place. We had to leave them behind. With tin tomatoes, fantastic. Yeah. So we would have had plenty of tomatoes. But the food was, it must have been passable. I don't think it did anybody any harm. And I say, just summarising the whole thing, I don't think that the camps, apart from the fact that you were prisoners and you couldn't get out anywhere, and you couldn't really hear any reputable news, although we used to get letters from relatives.
Did you? You received letters, did you?
Yes, I got quite a lot of them, more than I thought. I took all the envelopes out. And
yes, did you get mail quite regularly?
Not very frequently, no, because they were not particularly well off or whatever, and they couldn't send parcels all the time. And we did send Red Cross letters off when the war first broke out. And I sent one to my brother in England, who was in England. And I cheated. I said, we are all well here, and Dad's well, and, you know, and being well looked after. Give my regards to Hobson Altree. So he came back with it. I've spoken to him. All's okay with Hobson and Altree. Who were Hobson Altree? It was an insurance agent, and I had a large insurance policy with them, and I didn't want it cancelled because I couldn't pay the premiums. So I got him to contact them, and of course they said it's okay. So I was very naughty, really.
Understandably. Well, thank you very much indeed for telling me yet more. Thank you.
Yeah.